Welcome to BizMag Podcast and Media. Today, our guest is Dr. Sushil Bhatia, who is a global innovator, entrepreneur, and professor. So to briefly introduce him to you, he has several patents and has invented, innovated 30 plus products like glue stick, convention badges, labels, software, packaging stampers, as well as disruptive technology of decopier, for which business school cases have been published. As an entrepreneur, he is a founder of companies in the field of software, packing products, and office products. Currently, he is president of JMD Manufacturing Inc. in Framingham, MA, in America. He is also a professor and executive in residence emeritus in Sawyer Business School, Suffolk University in Boston, and teaches courses on innovation, entrepreneurship, new product development, happiness, business foundation, and we'll know more about it during our discussion. He has been interviewed on ABC's Good Morning America, NBC's Today Show, CNN, and has written up in many global publications like the Wall Street Journal, Boston Globe, Economic Times, etc. He has won many awards as entrepreneur, innovator, and as professor. He is also a TEDx talk speaker. So welcome Dr. Sushil Bhatia to BizMag Media today on this platform.
Thank you, Vanita. I'm happy to be here.
So how are you feeling the difference between India and America in terms of academics, in terms of what your field has been?
Well, from being overcrowded to loneliness, that's the only difference, big, big difference that hits you, right? You're surrounded by people all the time in India, and you come back to the US, and it's just you and your family. That's about it. Especially when the weather is cold, nobody gets out. But we anticipate that, we know it. We have lived here for many years. But still, it's a big change. It's a transition.
Right. From being surrounded by so many. Understand that.
Yeah.
So tell us about your industry experience. Like I just said, you have 30 plus patents. What are these all about? Whether these were patented in America or some other countries?
Well, all the patents that I have, they're all issued in America and assigned to the companies here. So I have worked with several companies in the US, a company called MacTag, then Denison Manufacturing Company. And all this innovation and new product development I did was for these companies. And those patents were issued and assigned to these companies as well. And then after a few years of being there, then I left and I started my own company and got some patents and developed a lot of new products as an outcome of that. Because one of the things that we do is look at what the customers want. And when the customers keep on calling and asking the same question, we say, well, there is a market opportunity there. Then let's develop some product, introduce them, and go to the market with those and make the customers happy and make ourselves happy too as a result of that. And you know, one of the things, Vanita, we always know is a lot of new products just fail. 95% of new products fail within a couple of years. So we have to be careful. And one of the important thing for an innovator or entrepreneur to remember is when to draw the line that enough is enough and this market is not ready, or the price point is not right, or customers expect more than that. And sometimes you have to decide, well, time to move on to something else. This is what we call fail fast and fail cheap. So instead of keep on just putting resources behind that all the time, you say, okay, this is about it, and let's move on to something else. And opportunities keep on coming up. And that's why I love being an entrepreneur and innovator. And that has been my path all along till I got a chance to start using my skills as an entrepreneur innovator to start teaching them in the business school.
So that was my next question. What motivated you to join business school as a teaching faculty? So yeah, please continue.
So what happened was I was as one of the panelists at the Suffolk Business School, and along with the dean and a few other people in the panel, and we were talking about how do we encourage people to develop new products and new ideas, and how do we go from idea to execution. And at the end of the panel discussion, then the dean said, well, we want to start new courses in new product development innovation. you have the industry experience, you do a good job explaining things, so why don't you think of coming and teaching here? And you can become a full-time professor at the university, and you can still continue to run your business. So to answer your question, I never left the industry. So my company, JMD Manufacturing, is still running. And the deal was that all the courses that I have teach per semester, I will go in 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And the rest of the time, I can still continue to run my business and bring that hands-on experience to the classroom, which is what students wanted. And that has been going on for almost 18 or 19 years now.
That's great, because in India also now there is a new concept of bringing industry professionals into business schools or into engineering schools to give practical hands-on experience to the students. Because, you know, generally you are just studying theory, but if there is some professional there, he can help you out. What are the practicalities of such kind of theory?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have, during my visits to India, I have taught at MDI in Gurgaon, Sharda University in Noida, and I have been a speaker at many other universities in Jodhpur, and there was a university, Petroleum University in Dehradun, so they asked me to come there and give a talk there as well. How to use the ideas, because Vanita, people have a lot of ideas, but the whole problem is they don't know how to go from idea to execution. And generally, people want to be entrepreneurs and innovators at the first sign of resistance. They say, oh, I can't do this. So this is what I teach, how you can overcome some of these obstacles and just keep on going and follow the path. So that's what makes my global experience from all sides. And of course, I went to school in India and then in Belgium. I did my PhD in chemistry in Belgium. And so I have global experience from that point of view as well. And that helps in the classroom.
And true. And entrepreneurship bug has bitten the Indian youth for last decade because of the policies of the current government. And, you know, every student wants to be an entrepreneur. So your experience, and you're such a huge experience of 18, 19 years would definitely help if some institutes are ready to introduce such course into their modules or into their curriculum. So going over to next question, what kind of courses did you introduce for the students?
So the one of the most famous well-known courses that I did was teaching students how to work in virtual teams. Not online, but virtual teams. So this was an executive MBA program. So what we did was I introduced the virtual team concept and made the students come from different countries. Although they were all in the US, they were all in the classroom, but we gave them the identity. One became Indian, one became Chinese, one became Mexican, with different disciplines. And they had to develop new products using electronic media. Although they were in the classroom all the time, but they were not allowed to talk to each other also. So they had to learn how to manage the difference in time from various countries, how to manage different aspects of culture, the language and everything. So that became such a huge successful experiment that it became a part of the executive MBA program. And we wrote two publications and published two articles and published them also. This is way before online classes started. So they were in the classroom, but not allowed to talk to each other. So this was the virtual team concept, which slowly became a global concept. So that MBA classes that I was teaching face-to-face as well as online.
Starting from the concept. So that is a very beautiful concept. Actually, this is a new concept. I heard about it somewhere else also. And this is a very good example of giving live example to the students, though they are in classrooms, but still separated from each other. And they communicate with each other only through electronic media, as if they are working from different countries.
That's what I started when I started teaching at Suffolk. And what happened was, since we created the teams, Vanita, and I was a part of each team, so I could monitor them, how well they are crossing the boundaries in terms of keeping track of the time difference and everything else. And this is what is being accepted and being used in classrooms now, as you discussed just now.
Mm-hmm. And what are the other course that you were taking?
So I started courses on new product development and on frugal innovation, because everybody cannot afford very expensive products. So we started classes on frugal innovation. And what happened? And then I started a class on happiness, because mental health is one of the biggest issues faced by entrepreneurs and innovators. Because as I said before, 95% of the businesses fail within 3 years, and 90% of the new products also fail. And people don't know how to deal with all of these issues, because it's a mental stress, and nobody wants to admit that they have been failures. And all of us, including me and you and everybody, we all face failures every now and then with the products, with the companies, with the business. And so I started this happiness class, which is in Taunton Business School. And it is basically to say how to manage your mind. So I use the term mom. You know, everybody always says, when I have a problem, let me call mom. And moms generally have all the answers. And then moms help us calm down and look at things differently and quietly and help us move forward. So I use the concept mom as managing of mind. And how do you manage your mind to overcome all these hurdles, all these failures, and all these issues you are facing to be able to move forward to the next step rather than giving up and just move it from there? And that's the happiness class I created. How to acquire, retain, and benefit from the happiness, the mindset of using mom, think neutral, using laughter, using meditation, and just change your mindset altogether and be happy and move on to the next station in life so that you can be more successful in that one.
Yeah, I watched your one of the talks and could see how such a big crowd of students were happy and following each step of yours and were enjoying and actually learning the concept of mom. So what was the outcome of your classes? Like, it was new products, developing new products. Do you think it was successful? More students were coming in, or some of the products were able to go to the market?
So what we did was, in the first semester when I started this new concept, we had, I think, about 27 new product ideas which came out of the classroom. So I went to the dean and I said, all business schools have the same thing, business plan competition. Let's have a competition called New Product Innovation Competition. So people can put together their ideas and how they can move forward from there. And so we started with about 27 of those products. And then we continued to grow that. And like an entrepreneur, you know, one of the things that you do in business is you try to scale it up. So the competition that I started, so the next 10 years that I ran it, we grew it from 27 entries to over 300 entries per year, took it out of the US, made it global. And the award money, when we started, we had $5,000 in award money. And by the end of 10 years, we were close to $100,000 in cash and services to provide to the innovators and the students and entrepreneurs to go to the next stage. So that was the huge success that came out from all these classes. And then, although we started this competition with the executive MBA students, then the university, Suffolk University, liked it so much, we brought it to the regular MBA and we brought it to the undergrad students as well, and expanded that to the beyond the business school into the College of Arts and Sciences as well, and the law school students, because Suffolk has three different areas in which it teaches students. So it was a huge success, and I ran it for 10 years. And that's what, like I said, that's what entrepreneurs do. We figure out new ways of doing things to keep on expanding. We brought in the sponsors. We brought in, as you can imagine, if 300-400 entries per year, you need a lot of judges also. So we managed the whole process and conducted that. So that was the good, successful outcome of the whole thing. Vanita, you're on mute again.
So that's a great success in terms of revenue earned and then giving it back to students to move ahead with their products. That's definitely right. A very nice ecosystem created within the university with your initiatives. So my next question would be, when we were talking offline, you mentioned a parent-student engagement model. What is it all about?
So what happens is, generally, as you know, you have been a professor yourself, we generally create teams of students in the classroom. And the students work together, they learn to how to deal with each other, they learn how to compete, They learn how to deal with each other's temperament. Then I introduced a new concept in my class. I said, okay, we will have the teams, but not teams of students. It will be a team of one student and one parent, either mother or father, because the parent will bring their life experience and business experience to the team. Students will come up with the new ideas. They will be learning in the classroom how to execute them from idea to execution. And it will be a new way of promoting innovative thinking. And all the parents happily signed up. And I would say about 80% of the parents were overseas. They were not even in the US.
Okay.
But because the students were in the US, they were physically in the classroom. It was a great contact for parents to constantly have to see what the students were doing. And they participated. And at the end, the parents had to fill a questionnaire of what they contributed to the whole thing, in addition to the students, and how the team worked well between the two of them. And that experiment was obviously very successful. And then we used that to launch a new program, which probably I shared the flyer with you. One student, one adult.
Yes.
Because the whole concept in this was be innovative, but be with a part of the family and let everybody pull together to make you a success.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the parents, the reports that we got from parents were absolutely wonderful, how happy they were to be part of the whole, each team with their children.
So as you said, your programs were on designs, innovations, new product development. Entrepreneurship, I feel, is a versatile term, is a broad term. And these things
yeah.
come as a part and parcel of entrepreneurship, definitely. So if somebody wants to be an entrepreneur, how this course can help him to develop into an entrepreneur?
So what we did was, so we took from innovation to entrepreneurship, which included writing business plans, going out and talking to the customers, including stopping on the roadside and starting to talk to people to get their feedback on their ideas before they started putting together how they will develop the product and how will they take it to market. That's what I talk about, idea to execution. It's idea to execution take us to entrepreneurship. So they had to use the software to develop the 3D products, make the actual prototypes, and share that with the potential customers to get their feedback and develop the business plan based on that as to how we're going to be doing this marketing, where will we go, and what kind of customers. And they had to physically, till the COVID-19 hit, they had to physically go out and talk to the customers in local area. In Boston area, there is a lot of industry, a lot of offices, a lot of software and manufacturing companies. So they physically went there and spoke to the appropriate people, the decision makers, because you know, we all know people are always willing to buy something as long as they don't have to spend the money. But when you talk to the actual decision makers and when they have to write a check, that's when you find out what the depth of their understanding of the product is. So that's what they have to do, to go out and do that like an entrepreneur, and how they will launch the business from there.
Okay. So how do you think this program or course would be beneficial to any other student sitting in any other part of the world?
It will be beneficial because everyone has a new idea of a new business. And what we do is we will teach them how to identify the opportunities where they are, how to turn them into a possible prototype, not only the product, but prototype business type idea, and go through various stages. As I was talking earlier about fail fast, fail cheap, and go through all the financial projections, the market growth, and put those benchmarks where to stop. Because the general term that we use, and sometimes entrepreneurs find it difficult to understand, that if the industry in which you're trying to enter, if the AGR annual growth rate is less than about 12%, you don't want to be there because the competition is too strong already and you will get knocked out very, very quickly. So these are some of the benchmarks that you use to be able to go further. And also the thing, and I wrote it to you, I said 2 + 2 = 1/2. And most people say, well, 2 + 2 = 4. No, I said, no, 2 + 2 = 1/2, because first 2 is for time, second 2 is for money. And so the entrepreneurs have to remember that whatever you plan, it will take twice as long and it will cost twice as much to get to the destination, and return is generally half of what we thought it would be. If you use that basic formula, then the planning becomes a lot easier. Because one of the things that I hear from entrepreneurs all the time is, oh, I will live without money. I won't take any salary. And that's not the right approach, because eventually we all need some resources to live and survive. And people keep on cutting corners, and before you know, most of them run out of money. So that's why we say 2 + 2 is half before 2 + 2 becomes 22. And that's where the success happens. So we use that basic thing, and it's applicable globally. Everybody has to understand you have to have resources, both human resources as well as financial resources to get to where you want to get to. And you have to be ready to what we call pound the pavement or hit the road, get your feet on the ground to go and talk to people. And it's amazing how, when you are committed and you have the integrity, how people will come out of the woodwork to help you. People who don't even know you, they'll still come and help you, because most people want you to be successful. All it takes is the determination, commitment, integrity, and desire to be successful. And understand failures will happen. The parking spots will come along the way where you want to stop because you get tired, you get exhausted. But no, you figure out a way to move forward. And that's a global approach you can use with anybody.
That's wonderful. So my next query would be, this is going really, really wonderful. What could, whom do you credit for your success as an innovator and entrepreneur, coming back to your own journey as an entrepreneur?
I think the family plays a very, very critical role. And whenever I give a talk, I always say, they ask me the same question. What keeps you motivated going? I said, well, I'm trying to impress my wife. Okay, and I do. And she is one of my biggest supporters, as well as biggest, analyzer. So whenever I have new product idea or business idea, I sit down and talk to her. And she's wonderful in terms of figuring out the things which I don't see as an entrepreneur many times. And so we form a great team. And that's one of the reasons I wrote to you, was the role of the family, your spouse and your children. Because, you know, we generally say in business, you can be only as successful as your other people want you to be. It's not only about you, it's the support system. And the support system you have to have with your spouse and with your family, because eventually at the end of the day, you're going to come home. And if you're not happy being at home, you cannot be innovative. You cannot address those issues that you face every day. True. And then you find the right people to work with in your company and create a wonderful team there. But it all starts with the family and from your home. And then it flows from there.
So very seldom I find a man giving credit to the family for the success, though women are generally very generous, giving credit to the family for the support. So that's wonderful. I can see you have a wonderful soul and you're a wonderful human being as far as family is concerned. Your family is also fortunate to have you as with them, like part of them.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. But that's what it takes, Manita.
Yes, I understand that. It cannot be, because if at home you are not, home is a place where you come from, struggles and all the challenges which you face out in the world. Yeah. And home should be a place where you come back and you want relaxation, where you can share and you can be peaceful. You know, it should be a calm, meditative place for you.
Absolutely.
It's your family which makes it like that.
Yeah. And if your family is happy, you're automatically happy at that point. That's the goal. Yeah. Right. That is the goal ultimately. Yeah.
So tell us something about your own products and patents, your current company, what it is into, what kind of products you are making.
In my present company, in JMD Manufacturing, we make marking and coding machines and supply items like inks and print plates. So, you know, every product that we buy has to have a date of manufacturing, date of expiry, MRP, batch number and everything on that. So in our company at JMD, we make these mechanical devices. They're not electronic, they're all mechanical devices which get mounted on the production line. And they put this date of manufacturing, date of expiry, batch number and everything on the products as they move down the conveyor belt. The products as well as the finished boxes. And so the our machines, they go anywhere from a handheld small unit like the mouse of a computer to units which can print as long as a message as long as 18 inches. Mm-hmm. And none of these machines, as I said, none of these machines are electronic. They're all mechanical. And the good part of that is they almost never break down.
Right.
And since they don't break down, they require supply items. And supply item is where most of the revenue stream is. You know that the old model of razor and razor blade. So you don't make money on the razor, it's all of the razor blade. So most of the revenue comes from the supply items for us.
Mm-hmm.
And
you can also say that because they do not depend upon electricity, they are also eco-friendly?
They are all eco-friendly. All the inks are eco-friendly. The print plates are made of rubber, which are also eco-friendly. And the main thing is, since these machines, they seldom break down, we almost never have to make a maintenance call or maintenance visit to the customer. Most of the problems we have been able to solve on the phone and just give them the manual, they pick up the parts, we do that on the phone, and they just fix it themselves.
That's wonderful.
So that model works out pretty good for us. So out of this, we created two other companies. One was the software company, as you were mentioning earlier. So the first one we did was because customers kept on calling and asking us how to solve this problem, what kind of ink should we use, what kind of packaging material we use. So we thought this was a great way to start a new business. So we started a packaging line website where the customer could put in whether they are using PVC or using polyethylene or whatever material they are using, cardboard, and what kind of printing they want to do. And they could get the answer instantly. So we could supply them those inks. Then subsequently, we found that a lot of people want to erase the information, the batch code and everything else because they want to recycle and they have to put new ones. That's when I came up with the idea of a decopier, because a lot of the paper that we use and print out, it gets wasted. Most of it gets thrown out eventually. Mm-hmm. So then I came up with an idea of how to remove this ink from a printed paper. And we created a small machine called decopier, in which all the printed paper from laser printer or from the photocopy machine, you could feed through that and it will come out clean on the other side. So the same sheet of paper could be used up to four times.
Wow.
And that was one of the disruptive innovation. So that's where my background in chemistry and business, they all worked out pretty good.
Right. So this concept of decopier is popular, I think, for many decades now.
It is popular, but you know what happened is when we're talking about the market, how the markets move, the cost of paper suddenly became so low that people didn't want to save the paper. But
right.
Then we introduce a new product in which the paper will be decopied and then destroyed. So
okay.
People could turn that into a pulp, and the pulp could be converted into a finished products like packaging pellets and things of that kind. So along with the market, that we made that change as well.
But there could be one thing more, like you said, in the decopier, the paper goes, printed paper goes and comes out. Does the quality of paper decrease after that?
No, up to four times it was good.
So it can be used for notebooks or something like for underprivileged children also.
That's right, correct. And it could be used also as a rough sheet for rough notes.
Rough sheet works, yes. You know, those children who cannot buy high quality notebooks or paper, mm-hmm. there it can be used as draft books. They can
That's
use
right.
it for
exactly.
their work. Yeah.
Good.
It's a wonderful idea for recycling paper without
point,
destroying
yes.
it. Yeah, actually without destroying
and that's
it.
That's why it has been written up for the business school cases.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because it's such a disruptive technology, a disruptive product, that's why it became in interest to various people in the writing the business school cases. And I
because
got
what,
invited to... Sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
Please. So, because I was seeing that if you destroy the paper and convert it into pulp and then again may recycle into some of the product, that is again a cost costly thing because you have to undergo through processes. But if you use that recycled paper as it is, like a bunch of notebook, there is no cost involved.
No, that's absolutely true. The only reason we did that, what I just described, was to repurposing of the paper.
Right.
When it could not be reused, so you have a repurpose, then you can still save some money as a result.
So either you reuse it or recycle it, basically. Upcycle
that's
it.
That's right, exactly, yeah. Right. And you know, Vinita, in the US and many countries now, the ID theft is a big problem.
Right.
And most 50% of the ID theft, most people don't believe that, but most people think of the cybersecurity issues, but 50% of the ID theft happens from printed documents.
Right.
And that's why we need to destroy the confidential information, particularly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the D-copy also functioned as a good product.
Function. Right. Yeah. Okay. So I have some question, but I will research before asking you, or we can always discuss
fine.
It later. Yeah. So you are also a motivational TEDx speaker with a lot of fan base. So what you have already mentioned about your laughter therapy and MOM concept. So what else can I ask you? Yeah. What if we go to an institute and ask them to inculcate your course into their curriculum? So generally, how many weeks and what is the hourly load for the students?
So the semester that we run at Suffolk, it runs for 14 weeks. And 38 hours is the teaching time in the classroom time.
Mm-hmm.
And the...
Distributed in 38 weeks. Distributed in 14 weeks.
14 weeks, yeah. So twice a week. So each class is 75 minutes, so twice a week. So it comes to about 37, 38 hours of the teaching time. And I sent you a copy of the syllabus yesterday. Take a look at that. There's a table there which gives an indication of how many hours students have to commit to each class.
No, and for the audience. If you can just give me one approximate number.
So about 125 hours during the semester, students have to commit.
Right.
Which includes research, writing papers, doing the teamwork, as well as presentation in the classroom.
Okay.
So it's about 125 hours.
Okay, 125. So that roughly makes 3.5 months, which is one semester of any course.
Yeah, exactly. So that's right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Because these are the guidelines given for the accreditation of the universities, and that's what we do.
So finally, what message would you like to give to our audience, whether they are university deans or vice chancellors, and to the general youth?
So I would say be innovative, be creative, be an entrepreneur, and be happy. Because that's the best way to go. Because if you love what you're doing, it's no work anymore. It's the fun part and the outcome. You know, being an innovator and entrepreneur is, when you see that product in your hand, it's like holding your baby. And nothing gives more pleasure than holding your child in your hand. And developing a product, physical product, is the same way, because now you've given it a shape, you can hold it, touch it, feel it, and hold it, and you get great thrill out of that. And as I said earlier also, being an innovator and entrepreneur is, I think, is the best way to go. Your capabilities are unlimited, and how much you can use and benefit from that. It's absolutely amazing.
So dear audience, if you have any idea and you want to develop it and you are coming across some hurdles and want to have some guidance from Dr. Sushil Bhatia, you can contact him directly or through us. Our email address is contact@bismag.com, and this is our website, bismag.com, where you will get all the contact details. Dr. Sushil Bhatia's profile you can find on LinkedIn. He's a famous personality, so Google will give you fast his profile and contact coordinates. Thank you so much. Yeah, please.
No, Vanita, let's not finish before we do one important thing. We have to do a laughter together. We say,
okay.
Laugh often, laugh freely, laugh frequently, and laugh for no reason.
Okay.
So I want to thank you. So I want to thank you with a big laugh, and you join me, please. Okay. It was great fun doing this thing. So let's do that. 1, 2, 3.
Ha 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 So,
as we said, laugh for no reason. Look at the lighter side of life. There's a lot of fun there.
Yeah, and this is a beauty therapy also, my dear audience.
Absolutely.
Yeah, beauty therapy as well as spiritual therapy. So this is the easiest
you
that you
it,
don't need any guidance or any video to do that.
Pleasure as well. And good to be in touch with you, Vanita.
Thank you, Doctor.